under the tree. And in between the laps is some real, genuine pearls of wisdom. Alan?
First, I would like to express my thanks to Tom and to everyone concerned with this roundup for the kindness of their invitation in including me in this wonderful gathering, for the pleasure of renewing all friendships, and for the inspiration of that talk of Millie's. That was terrific. Both Pete and Millie made some passing references to the suicide kicks that the alcoholic goes off on once in a while. And I heard one the other night from a buddy of mine that was a beaut. Toward the end of his drinking career, he was cornered in his kitchen by his wife and his mother. And they were berating him from one side to the other. And with typical alcoholic dramatics, he jumped up, flung open the oven door, turned on the gas, and stuck his head in. His mother jumped up on one side and his wife on the other, and they shoved it in further and held it there. This is one way of coming into AA if you last. My name is and I'm an alcoholic. And in the beginning, at least, I was a working drunk. Not because I was a career man. I had no income, no annuities, no rich relations, but I had a thirst. And in order to drink, I had to have money. And in order to get money, I had to suffer the indignities of labor. And I always found myself in positions that were very much beneath my dignity. I was always subject to the supervision of people whom I regarded as intellectual peasants. I considered the period Monday through Friday a very unpleasant interlude between drinking. But inevitably, Friday would arrive. And about noontime Friday, I would begin to experience a very pleasant glow of anticipation. I hadn't had a drink yet, but already I was beginning to fly. And I would force myself semi-hysterically through those last 4 hours of Friday. And then finally, 4:30. The blessed time. Here I face the weekend. And it's amazing how for the alcoholic, when he views a weekend prospectively from Friday, what an interminable period in time this is. Here I am, my own boss. Nobody can push me around. And I have money. This is indeed the best of all possible worlds. So I would take myself home. I would go through the motions of having dinner. And immediately thereafter, I would get meticulously attired. And in all my sartorial elegance, I would walk 2 blocks, turn in at the local gin mill, ascend a stool, and give forth with the erudition. Usually on my left hand was the local garbage collector. On my right hand, the neighborhood iceman. In the middle, Einstein. There was no subject on which I was not an expert. And the conversations were tremendous. Stimulating. All-encompassing. And very quickly they progressed to the place where everybody talked, nobody listened, nobody gave a damn. Then all too quickly, at least for me, came that inevitable time. The guy who owned the joint wanted to go home. And there would then ensue for me the inevitable argument. One for the road. This I insist upon. This I need like a hole in the head. This I would get. And I would take myself very unsteadily home, crawl up the stairs, into the sack, and collapse. And there would then follow 4 or 5 hours of alcoholic stupor, and then I would awaken Saturday morning, sick, bad taste, butterflies in the stomach, but an awareness. This is Saturday. All right, so you're a little sick, but the joints are still open. You still have money. So this morning, luxuriate in your misery. And we would stretch out for an additional hour. And then we would arrive. And once again, meticulously attired, 2 blocks, same stool, same characters, same conversations, same results. 2 p.m. stiff. 2:30 p.m., back in a sack, unconscious. 5 p.m., awake, sick. But it's still Saturday. Don't worry, double header today. Right back again, 2 blocks, same stool, all things the same. 3 a.m. Sunday, same bartender, same argument, one for the road. 3:30, crawl up the same stairs, back in the sack, collapse. 4 or 5 hours, alcoholic stupor, then it's Sunday morning. Awake, sick, no butterflies this morning, eagles this morning. Also an awareness, this is Sunday. Tomorrow is Monday. This long weekend has telescoped. Tomorrow we must earn the daily bread. Tomorrow we must hit the ball. And we know the string is running out. Feel the hot breath on the neck. How many grandparents can you bury? How many attacks of spastic colitis can you have? Always Monday. We know that the job is slipping and we need the job and we want to keep the job. But right now we have the immediate problem. We are sick, but we are also intelligent. All alcoholics are geniuses. So we use this. We shall program this day. Point one, recover. This we know how to do. Be home at 2 p.m. Stay home. Don't go out tonight. Back to bed early. 8 hours sleep. Tomorrow morning, on your feet, hit the ball. No hits, no runs, no errors. This is the program for today. And we arrive. And we sally forth and we execute point one brilliantly. By 2 p.m., blind. By 2:30 p.m., back in the sack, unconscious. By 5 p.m., awake, suffering. But we remember the resolve of this morning. We are further aware of the closer proximity of Monday. And we want to keep this resolve. And we begin to prowl from room to room like a caged tiger. And the perspiration begins to flow. And the nerves begin to dance. And then finally we throw up the hands and say, who the hell am I kidding? If I put my head down on a pillow tonight, it will explode. Just a few beers so I can sleep. And back to the same stool. And again, all things the same. And then it's 2 a.m. Monday. Same bartender, same argument. One for the road. 2:30 p.m., back in a sack, unconscious. And then it's Monday. And I'm going to die. Sit on the edge of the bed. The head between the hands. And the perspiration cascading down the face. Every nerve is quivering. And the self-loathing begins. What kind of a fool are you? Why must you always stay until the last shot is fired? Oh, God. The only time we communicate is duty, Monday morning. The little woman stands over the bed and she shakes her head from side to side in perplexity. And you say, please, not this morning. Leave me alone. And then with terrific effort, we drag the quivering wreck from the soggy bed. We stumble into our clothes and we aim ourselves in the direction of employment. And every step is purgatory. And finally, at long last, we get to the entrance of the place of employment. And we stumble through the gate. And here comes the normal one. Good morning. You want to kill him. We stumble into an office and grope our way up to a desk. And at random, we select a nondescript piece of correspondence. And for 8 hours, we carry it like a banner. From office to office. Please, God, don't let anybody ask me any questions that require an intelligent answer today. Please, God, make it be 4:30, quick. This is prayer. And finally, at long last, the blessed time, 4:30 arrives. And the wounded warrior returns home. And the little woman said, how did it go, said, please. Just let me die. Back into the sack. And twice that night, the sheets come off the bed. We're bathed in our own perspiration. And then finally, it's Tuesday. And it's not much better. And for 8 hours more, we cheat, chisel, and connive our way through the boss's time. And back home and right back into the sack. And then it's Wednesday. And about 8:30 a.m. Wednesday, we have the first manifestations of health returning. Because right about here, we begin to notice around us the existence of certain small inefficiencies in the corporation. Wednesday night, returning home, we have the semblance of a spring in the step. And we announce to the little woman, tonight the master is taking sustenance. Let me have a bouillon cube and a cup of hot water. Then it's Thursday. And by 9 a.m. Thursday, we're convinced of one thing. The entire population of this corporation save one imbecile. You have to show them how to do everything. Move over. Thursday night, we demand lamb chops broiled. And then it's Friday. And it's noontime. And here's that feeling again. And it's 4:30. Here's that weekend again. And here's money. And we're on our way home. But we are not completely insensible people. We have a vivid recollection of the week that has just concluded. We are aware of the small kindnesses extended by the little woman. Not such a bad state. She didn't use the spurs too hard this week. But there's a gnawing realization way back here, I gotta get out. But we'll worry about that later. And into the house we come. And it's immaculate. And the kids are scrubbed and shiny. A nice dinner on the table. And even the wife looks pretty good. All the wrong ingredients. So being alcoholic, we go on the prowl. From room to room. And ultimately, we discover one household chore that did not get attention that day. And we say to the little woman, what happened? And more than likely, our answer is, I was busy. And then we go into the act. So you were busy. Did you see me, a dying man, leave this house every morning this week to keep a roof over your head? And you can't take care of a simple detail like this? This type of needling eventually evokes a response. And the minute she answered me back, she was dead. You don't appreciate me. Out. And we're heading right back to the stool. But right about here, a very interesting conflict begins to manifest itself. On one level of the alleged intelligence, we had just put over a sharp deal. Nice going. But on another level, somewhere down in here, there's a little voice that intrudes itself. And it says, she did not deserve it, and you know it, you phony bum. But this voice I can't listen to now. Let me get back to the stool. Let me have a few, and I'll figure out a way to square it later. Also, we have a vivid recollection of Monday that has just gone by. Don't let that happen again. Just stick to beer. Get out of that joint at a reasonable hour. You can do it. Watch it. And the weekend begins. And the weekend goes by. And again, it's Monday. And it's different. It's worse. This is my case history. Except as with every practicing alcoholic, it got progressively worse. And it progressed to the place where no longer was it possible to make it on Monday. No longer possible to make it Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And then the escape department, into the service, out of the service. 1945, I stand before His Honor. Like every practicing alcoholic, ultimately, to put it charitably, I was placed under supervision. The Bastille. And out of this encounter, I hear my first reference to Alcoholics Anonymous. His Honor. He looked me over. He said, "Well, I see you're a veteran. I had the ruptured duct, at least the word at that time." He said, "You're a young punk. If I were you, I would contact Alcoholics Anonymous." And I said, "Yes, sir." And here I thought, you should drop dead. But regardless, I went to the Bastille, and I did not care for the cuisine, the accommodations, or the association. I wanted out. So I wrote a letter. And nothing happened. Finally, my good wife relented. She got me released on my second son's birthday, and I went to live in the home of my parents. My father's a retired policeman. Not too sympathetic. And I spent my time sitting across the room. He spent his time glaring at me. And finally, here comes a knock at the door, and here's a guy, and he holds up the letter. He said, "Did you write this?" I said, "Yes, but who needs you now? I'm out." But he was an insistent character, and eventually he wore me down, and I went to my first AA meeting. Primarily to get out from under the baleful glance of my father. And here I received my introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. The only ingredient I had, quiet desperation. I had no home, I had no job, I had no help, I had no money. I had no friends, I had no self-respect, I had no prospects, I had nothing. And if this whooper wanted to take me in his car at his expense, why not? It's a night out. And I sat and I listened to speakers. And every time they spit an infinitive, I was wounded. I had the supreme arrogance of the Irish alcoholic. But this arrogance worked in my favor because I evaluated the mental caliber of the protagonists here. And I said, if these whoopers can stay sober with this mumbo-jumbo, for me it's got to be a cinch. So on the basis of a challenge, I said, I'll show them. And I continued to go to meetings. This challenge motivation was perfect for me because I did one thing right. I didn't drink. For all the wrong reasons, but I didn't drink. And days became weeks and weeks became months. And my wife said, whatever the hell it is, keep doing it. Finally, 6 months, and I still hadn't had a drink. And one of those situations developed where there was a meeting scheduled and the visiting group didn't show up, and we had a frantic chairman galloping around the room. Have to rig a meeting. And he turned to me and said, how long you been sober? I said, 6 months. He said, talk. This is not the way to approach an alcoholic. I said nothing. And since I was the novice, when the meeting began, I was speaker number one. And I got up on my feet. And I said, my name is Alan. And I am an alcoholic. This is important. This is the first public admission. Why not? Didn't cost me a nickel. I had seen others do it, why not me? This was an admission for their benefit. I said, I am an alcoholic. I've been coming around here for 6 months. I've been listening to Peace of Mind and Serenity until I'm left-handed. Where the hell is it? And then I sat down. I This is the quietest room in New Jersey. When that meeting was over, I was surrounded. Now, one very casual little guy, my friend Margaret Brothers remembers him, a guy named Grant, came sauntering up to me and he said, "Come here, hotshot." He said, "I have observed you for 6 months, and I do believe that you have been sober, and I have seen you here every week." He said, "Now, apparently from those few little gems that you gave out with tonight, during this period, some things have been troubling you." "Yes." He said, "One question. Why the hell didn't you say something about it?" This is a fair question. And I didn't have an answer. And I'd rather be found dead. I went back home that night and I went to bed and I tossed and I turned and I went through that Danny Thomas routine. I should have said nothing. The guy was right. So next week I went back and I selected the better member, small nucleus of the intelligentsia, to whom I will occasionally unburden myself. This is progress. And time continues, and I don't drink. And by virtue of the simple process of not taking alcohol, things begin to happen of their own volition. I stop shaking. I stop sweating. I begin to eat a little. Doesn't look like it, but I do. I get a job. I get a suit, coat, and pants match. I get a dollar. I begin to bring my head up, and I like this feeling. More importantly, I begin to listen not so critically. And I begin to recognize that these cases are nothing more or less than the simple projection of the basic symptoms of alcoholism. And I have to admit that if these are the symptoms of alcoholism, these are my symptoms, so I must be an alcoholic. Now I have progressed from this qualified admission for their benefit to a reluctant acceptance of the label. All right, I'll buy it. I'm an alcoholic. I'll buy it for now. But arrogance is far from dead. Give me a year. Give me one solid year without a drink. Give me this year to repair my financial senses. Give me this year to become revitalized physically, spiritually, economically, emotionally. Give me a year to get back into the business world. Plus the knowledge that I have gained by my association with these characters, and I'll show them. But I have accepted, temporarily, the label. And time goes by. 7, 8, 9 months. And I get to know more and more people. And I begin to observe the very unhappy experiment department. And this is something to watch. Let's, for the sake of illustration, take everyone I knew in those days who had trouble. And let's call him collectively John Doe Alcoholic. And I looked at this collective John Doe Alcoholic, and I measured me against him. So let's look at John Doe from the physical aspect. How big is he? 6'3", 245 pounds. 6'2", 145 pounds. So here we have obvious superiority in the physical department. Let's look at John Doe Alcoholic from the educational standpoint. College, yep. University, 2. Degrees, 3. School, period. End of quote. Here also we have obvious superiority. three beds. Garage. Does he have an automobile, too? I haven't got a pogo stick. Let's look at John Doe from the standpoint of AA. How long? 3 years. 6 months. Let's explode collective John Doe to his component parts. Jim, Shag, Charlie, Willie. This was in 1946. Never once did I observe the successful experiment. Everyone ended disastrously. And when I measured these guys against me with their obvious superiority in every department, I began to wonder, is a year going to be enough? Now I've progressed to the point of conviction. This means me for keeps. And I don't like it. Here I am, age 33. And I love those neon signs. I got a lot of mileage left. Why does this have to happen to me? And I moaned and I groaned. And finally, here comes my little casual buddy. Give me a hot shot. Said, I'm listening to you. Said, you sound like a wounded moose. Said, I listened to this admission and acceptance and conviction thing, but you're always crying. He said, there's another word. Requires some attention. So what is this? He says, surrender. Now I had him. So I turned on my tormentor. I said, wait a minute, boy. When I came in and you guys said you take what you want, you don't have to do anything. Is this true? He said, this is true. I said, now when you tell me that I have to surrender, so this logical mind just implies I must surrender to something. And to me this sounds like the tambourine. And I ain't going to buy it. Said, I've got a year, haven't I, on my basis? Who the hell says I got to be happy? Only an alcoholic could construct a gem of logic like this. But this cookie was a smart cookie because he said, okay, kid, have it your own way, but keep coming. But in addition to this casual counselor, I also had a sponsor. This man was the soul of patience and kindness. With me, he had to be. And at about this stage of my development, suddenly it seemed every weekend, here comes the little Chevrolet chugging into my driveway. And old John would say, come on. I said, where am I going? He said, what's the difference? You've got nothing else to do. Get in. And on the first occasion, we took off for a neighboring town, pull up to a house, knock on the door. Here comes a woman, and she looked beat. She turns to my sponsor, she said, oh, you from AA? He said, that's right. She said, well, it's upstairs. I ascend the stairs with John. I don't know what I'm getting into until we open the bedroom door. And then I know. Because here lies the pigeon. He's shaking, the bed shaking, the room shaking. Old John says to me, go sit in the corner, be quiet. John sits next to the pigeon and he begins to talk. Not about the pigeon, but about John. The way he drank, the way he connived, the way he schemed, what happened, how they got into AA. And as John is talking to this character, it's amazing to observe. The bed begins to quiet down. And the guy begins nodding his head. Yeah, yeah. me. And I'm fascinated. Figure this guy John's a magician. He's got to be. Finally, John puts it to him, $64 question. You want to quit? Yep, when, now, let's go, bingo, meeting. In the space of a few short weeks, this horizontal character is a man. And I like him. And I'm amazed by the prowess of John. And it seems like every week we're off, pigeons here, pigeons there, I'm along, supercargo, go in the corner, sit down, shut up. Finally, I get to that place of material affluence. We now have a four-party telephone. And it rings, pick up the phone, and here's my friend John on the other end. But Alan, there's a guy over in Kingsburg who wants help. This is a nearby community. I say, yeah, where are you going? He said, well, I said I can't make it. Well, I know what's coming. I said, well, that's tough, but too bad I can't help you, John, because I haven't got a car. He said, well, where I'm going, I'm not going to use the iron lung. This is the old Chevy. So suppose you take it. Now, my first emotion is panic. I don't want any part of this deal. Who is this clown in Kingsburg? I never saw him. He never saw me. Why should I drop dead for him? I don't want to go. But something else intrudes itself here. This is my sponsor, John, who has been nothing but the soul of kindness, patience, and tolerance with me. And this is the first request he has ever made of me. And how can I, in good conscience, refuse John? This is development. So finally, I say, well, what do you think? Can I handle it? He says, sure, take the iron lung, go. So here we go. Pull up to a house, knock on the door, prototype, same woman. Said, AA, yes, ma'am, it's upstairs, now I got one. Walk in, same picture, horizontal, shake. Now I gotta start. What am I gonna tell this character? Well, I saw John operate. John used to tell him about John. This guy gets got. If he kills him, he gets. So I tell him, this is the way I drank. This is the way I operated. This is what happened to me. And in the right places, I'm getting the right responses. This is terrific. I get a warm feeling in here. I like this guy. This guy gets better if I gotta kill him. Pour it on. Finally, we get him to the strategic point. You want to quit? Yep, when? Now? Okay. Be ready. I'll be here Monday. Down the stairs we come, and his wife grabs me. Can I see you? Yes, ma'am. In the kitchen. 2-hour recitation, I get on what a lousy is. This guy is completely out of business. He owes everybody. He's unemployable. He's just no place. And she said, what am I going to do? And I have the answer. Easy does it. What else can I tell? Finally, here comes the appointed night. I'm there early. He's there, vertical. Ambulatory, get in. Off we come to the meeting. We come through the door. And like a homing pigeon, he goes for last seat, last row. Tell him, up front. I don't want you to miss anything. Up up, we come and sit together, first row. Meeting starts, speakers get up, and they say everything wrong. Here I sit next to my pigeon. I want this guy to get A, eh? Come on, get to it! Get off the travelogue, get out to A. I'm sweating bullets. And I turn to look at my pigeon, he's like a rock. What's this picture all about? Here I sit with a guy I've seen once before. But about this guy, I know everything. His wife told me. Here I sit intensely interested in this man for his sake. This is the first division of concentration on self in a lifetime. Here I sit intensely interested in another human being. And from this relationship, I can't make a nickel. He hasn't got it. But this relationship is real. It's valid. You can see it. We are here together. This human relationship of one alcoholic for the other. Completely devoid of any material aspect. Yet it exists. You can see it. So when you take the material out of something and it's still there, what's left? Here is the rampant atheist. Here is the militant agnostic. Here is a guy who is embarrassed by God references. And here he sits engaged in the practice of spirituality and too damn dumb to know it. These things I recite only in the interest of the individual who might be sitting here tonight, who is apprehensive about not understanding what is entailed in this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't worry about it. Just come in as I did and go through the motions. Do what is suggested. Don't drink. Continue to make these meetings. Get to know some of the people. And you will discover a progression in Alcoholics Anonymous as there was progression in your alcoholism. And those things that confuse, perplex, and bewilder you will clear up. You only have to do one thing. Don't take one drink this day. And keep coming to these meetings. Place your faith in people first if necessary. Ultimately, you will find that you can place your faith in God. This is your own selection. One day at a time, one drink, one friend, one belief, one faith, one life restored.